From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. Being in education is a tough job right now. Decreasing budgets, a federal government that's seemingly de-emphasizing the Department of Education, and increasing pressure from social media, both for students and for teachers, all add up to systemic challenges. But locally, one public high school seems to be rising above these challenges to provide quality education and a vital sense of community. Today on the show, you'll hear from the principal of South Eugene High School and hear what's working for this institution ranked among the best in Oregon. Then, in the second part of the show, I'll talk with a colleague at OPB about a story from another school in Southwest Washington where a post from a student on social media has led to a teacher suspension and the entire faculty looking over their shoulders. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Key Zublin, the principal of South Eugene High School, believes that geography, university, and community are keys to why his school is among the top-ranked schools in Oregon. We talk with him now. Key Zublin, the principal for South Eugene High School, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Great to be here, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, boy, let's start with this. You know, in your estimation, what makes a great high school?
Well, that's a big question.
It is.
You know, I think a great high school, first and foremost, we have to remember that we are a public school and we are serving every student in our catchment area to the best of our ability. And so the greatest schools are the schools that can figure out how to meet every single student where they are and accelerate their learning to the greatest extent possible.
Okay. Why don't you talk about, you know, a high school doesn't simply stand alone. Talk about the partnership that is important between administration, between teachers, between students, between parents and the community in general.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, I think it's important to keep in mind that South Eugene High School is the oldest school in this district. It's now the oldest building, but it's also the oldest high school going back into the 19th century.
Okay.
And that was Eugene High School, and then it became South Eugene High School. And so there's literally a place in the school where I can find a room full of yearbooks that go back all the way to there.
Wow.
So there's a legacy there. And a lot of people in this community are deeply invested in South Eugene High School. There's a ton of people who've gone to that school, including myself. And the folks who are proud alumni of South Eugene High School come back. We have some events that celebrate our distinguished alumni. We have an event that's called Celebrate South, where we induct various graduates into our Hall of Fame. So I think getting back to your question, it's a deep level of community involvement and interest in that school. We have wonderful staff at that school who deeply care about the learning of all students. It's a great place.
Yeah. Well, South is ranked well in the state, and U.S. News and World Report puts it as, I think, the 16th best high school in the state, and one of the only ones sort of outside of the Portland metro area. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Why do you think South sort of rises above?
Well, it has for a long time, so there's a legacy there. You know, if you look at the way that those rankings are calculated, they look at six factors. They look at AP and IB participation, for example, as one of the factors. Now, we serve an area that is a pretty academic part of town. A lot of children of professors go to South Eugene High School. There's a lot of students taking AP classes and a lot of students taking international baccalaureate classes as well through the IHS program. So that's a big component.
International high school.
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's right. And then, of course, they look at grad rates, which our grad rates tend to be the highest in the district, which we're proud of. And I'll get back to that in a second. And then, you know, other factors. One of the most important factors, in my opinion, is how well our underserved students perform in our system. That's about 10% of how the rankings are calculated. And it makes me happy that that's a place where we shine as well in taking care of the most marginalized among us.
Yeah. How does resources factor into that, you know, whether it's taxes or just, you know, parent support? Talk about that and how important that is.
Well, I mean, as your listeners know, we're heading into a time of resource reduction in 4J, and there's a lot of reasons why this is happening right now. And what it means is that the breadth of what we can offer, we really have to fight to protect, because the how comprehensive your curriculum is another thing that distinguishes a school. And that doesn't just mean high-level AP and IB classes. That also means career technical education classes, hands-on things, the arts, performing arts. All of those are important for a subset of students to experience and experience belonging and thrive.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with Key Zublin. He is the principal of South Eugene High School. We have talked to many educators and whatnot about this sort of, I think some people call it the enrollment cliff, and that we're facing this issue with, we just don't have as many kids before. Talk about navigating through that pretty big challenge.
It is a big challenge. You know, historically, if you looked at the 4J school districts enrollment numbers, it wasn't that many years ago that enrollment numbers were above 20,000. And then it was 15,000, and now there's a pretty good potential that it's going to be about 1,000 less in this coming year. That's a significant dip, and you know, it's due to drops in birth rates. That's sort of a nationwide trend. It also has to do with the cost of living in this town and how many young families can afford to live here. So that's a period of contraction that the district is going to have to adapt to and right-size the staffing, and that's painful, and that's what's happening right now. And at the end of all of that, my primary interest is in having a comprehensive high school that can offer as much meaningful programming as possible.
Okay. You talked about the fact that a lot of professors' kids go to your school, but also talk about just in general, is it a benefit having the state's flagship university just blocks away?
Oh, there's no doubt it's a benefit. Yes, we have a great relationship with the university, and we send about 75 students a year to the University of Oregon alone. That's extremely meaningful for us. It's also important that your listeners understand that South Eugene does serve a diverse catchment area. It also includes students from Glenwood who are walking through our halls as well and have a different set of needs than some of the other kids going there.
Yeah. I always think back to when I was in high school, and imagine you do as well. I think it's probably very instructive. Do kids...
I was the worst in high school. Let's just get that out there.
Uh-oh. You heard it here first, folks. Well, do the challenges that, you know, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds face today, is it unique to their generation? And I know... Of course it is, but I mean, is it uniquely difficult compared to what you and I faced decades ago?
Well, there's no question. They're on so many fronts. You know, the first most obvious being that in 2020, schools broke the social contract with our students during COVID. And that was something that I think none of us would have ever anticipated could happen, that we would shut down schools for such a long period of time and then restore them in a really different form. And we're still seeing the fallout from that. We're seeing across the nation that rates of regular on-time attendance have still not gotten back to pre-COVID levels. We're seeing it in the norm, the expectation that we provide devices for every student and that a good chunk of their learning is done online, which is becoming increasingly more controversial. Because I think we're recognizing that the amount of device use is not really good for kids' mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the use of smartphones would be a huge shift if you were to come into the halls of South Eugene High School and compare it to when you were a kid. It's really different, which of course is what led to Governor Kotek's executive order trying to get phones out of the schools. Part of what I think she was trying to do is reteach pro-social behavior to kids who are just walking down the halls. And you wouldn't think a cell phone would matter in that context as much as it matters in the classroom, but it does. There's a lot of learning going on between two kids walking down the halls. And if you can get their noses out of phones, it's hugely beneficial.
Yeah. You brought up COVID, and the one question I have about that is, were there some benefits? Because obviously, you know, you and others in education had to turn on a dime.
Yeah.
Was there something that was somewhat positive from that?
Yeah. Well, boy, did we turn on a dime. I mean, think of a school district as like a giant steamship.
Mm-hmm.
Running in a direction with an enormous amount of inertia and a captain's hand sort of resting lightly on the wheel. Well, the rudder fell off and the engine crapped out. And we had to immediately rethink what we were doing, and we knew that it was going to be painful for kids. And I remember thinking at the time, I hope something good comes out of all of this. I hope that there's something that we gain. And I think that there has been some good that's come out of it. We have more resilient kids that have faced more challenges than you and I probably faced when we were that age. And resiliency is good, right? That's a good thing to have. And then there were opportunities for us to, you know, really engage in professional development with one another, which I think many school districts took advantage of. So mixed bag.
Yeah, definitely. What's it like being the principal today, now, when, let's face it, you know, you have a federal government that at least in some rhetoric seems to want to dismantle the Department of Education and public schools the way it's been. What's it like sort of, again, having to navigate that challenge?
Yeah. You know, a lot of that is just background noise.
Okay.
For the work. I think if you look at it on the boots on the ground level, people appreciate their schools. People appreciate their school administrators and their teachers, and they are entrusting their children to us, and that continues to be a priority for our families. I think apart from the scary stuff that goes on around funding at the federal level, which by the way hasn't stopped yet, and I'm not in the business of making predictions, but I'll just leave it there. It hasn't stopped.
Okay.
We're still getting the funding that we expected.
Okay. He's Key Zublin, the principal of South Eugene High School. Really appreciate you coming in and talking
to
us.
Great talking to you.
Let's now talk to my colleague up at OPB about a concerning story in Southwest Washington that might be a simple case of she said versus he said with major consequences. Eric Newman, the Southwest Washington Bureau Chief for OPB. Eric, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us.
Sounds great.
Yeah, I read your recent piece, and even though it's in Southwest Washington, I thought it will resonate with a lot of people. It was titled, "After the Dismissal of a Battleground High School Teacher, Other Educators Censor Their Curricula." Just give us a general overview about your story and what you found.
So it's a story about accusations that were made against a high school teacher in Battleground, Washington, which is about 30 minutes north of Portland, and how teachers are sort of having to navigate this world of politics and social media today. So it's about a social studies teacher named Amanda Gonzalez. The day that the conservative activist Charlie Kirk was killed in September 2025, she ran into an incident with a student where a student in the hallway came up to her and asked her if she knew about Kirk's death. And she has said to me, and it's documented in investigations, that she said that Kirk was not her political cup of tea. And she said thoughts and prayers for his family. Mm-hmm. And then the student said something different. The student said that in texts he sent to his mom, he said that his teacher had said she had no sympathy for Nazis. So two very different descriptions of the exchange that they had. That text message was then shared online where it went viral. There were all these emails sent to the district about how the teacher should be fired. Later on that day after the incident, Gonzalez was put on leave, and she's actually been on leave since then. So she's been on leave for about 8 months.
Wow.
It's kind of the other impact of this is that there's other teachers in the district that are sort of censoring themselves because they're just not sure if the district will come, will support them if something similar happened to them.
Yeah. So you did a pretty thorough deep dive and you talked to Gonzalez, you know, kind of tell us what she told you in general, but also just what kind of an impact it's had on her.
She said it was a pretty dramatic impact on her life, mostly because of this. Well, because she lost her job or was put on leave, I should say, and because this text went viral on social media. So she was physically threatened online by a parent who she had to get a restraining order against. Her parents' house was doxxed. The address was shared online, so they ended up having to get video cameras at their house. She described just a lot of anxiety that she has about leaving the house. So she said it has burned her life to the ground, was the quote that she used.
Wow.
And since then, she's been focused on trying to get her job back.
Yeah. So obviously, you reached out to the decision makers. Were you able to get a response from the school board or the administration? And it seems like, boy, they put her on leave really quickly, didn't they?
They did. They did an investigation where she was, they ultimately asked or called for her to be terminated later in that month. So that took a little bit of time, but she was put on leave the same day that this incident happened. The district said that they basically believed the students. They did their own investigation that led up to that request for her to be terminated. And I think they interviewed maybe half a dozen students and said that they found that they were credible. They said that Gonzalez had this history of sharing personal views on politics in school. And they said that the basis for wanting to get rid of her was that she had broken several school policies about things like staff expression at school. And that was the justification that they were using to try to fire her.
I see. And had you talked about it was known that this teacher would share political beliefs, but had she ever been in trouble before? What did her teaching record suggest?
From the documents, the investigations that I read about this, there wasn't any like major, problems. And in fact, it was the opposite. She'd been at this district for about from I think 10 or 11 years, and if I remember right, 8 of those years she had the highest possible marks as a teacher. She taught AP courses. Just from interviewing her as a person, it was clear that she's really passionate about her career.
So, okay, you mentioned another step in this process, a third-party arbitrator. So take us through sort of it went from a suspension, and she's been now suspended for almost a year or close to it. What's the next sort of chapter here with regard to this third-party arbitrator and what the decision from that person came down as?
So the arbitrator did their own investigation. This arbitrator is basically a retired judge in Washington State, and the arbitrator basically determined that the accusations against Gonzalez were not credible. So said the accusations from the students were not credible, and that the district had not met its burden of proof in all these in these various policies that it said that she had broken.
So does that mean she gets reinstated, or kind of where does it go from there?
Well, that's really the impasse. So she appealed what the district said. The reason the district said they wanted to put her on leave, and because she appealed it, she kind of wound up in this limbo period where there was buyout offers going back and forth, but she really just wanted her job back, and that's why it took 8 months. And the next step ultimately would have been for her to take the case to court to try to force the district to give her her job back.
Okay. And the other part of your story that you talked about was the fact that this isn't just impacting her. Other teachers at that high school and probably throughout the district and maybe throughout the state and even down here in Oregon are kind of looking at this and wondering about self-censorship. Talk about that aspect.
Yeah, and that's really kind of, I mean, this story has obviously been going on for quite a while. But that was the thing that I kind of found maybe even more interesting was there was other teachers in the district that I talked to who basically were saying, well, this judge has determined that Gonzalez was in the right, and yet the district isn't letting her go back to her job. So they were starting to sort of be really cautious about the types of things that they were doing in class. So in one case, I talked to an English teacher who was in the middle of teaching The Crucible, which is a book about the Salem witch trials used as a metaphor for the Red Scare and McCarthyism And so she's in the middle of teaching this book when an administrator pulls her aside and said, "We heard students talking about whether they could get you to say something to get you fired." And so the teacher basically has to go back into teaching this book about false accusations from young people in this town against adults, and sort of live this experience that she's teaching in her class. And so she talked about sort of pulling back from some of the lessons that she would have taught. She also talked about some poems from just famous poets that she didn't teach. I talked to a math teacher who previously said he would have sort of engaged with students more, because students, you know, ask all sorts of silly questions and stuff. And he just didn't feel like doing that. He just was strictly sticking to math because that felt like the safest thing for him to do. So sort of this like self-censoring chill that was happening, at least within the high school.
Some of the teachers that you talked to, did it seem like, and you mentioned, you know, having to pull that teacher aside and said, "We heard that some teachers, some students wanted to get you to trip yourself up." I mean, are they concerned that students are trying to almost act like, I don't know what the right term is, vigilantes to go after teachers maybe they just simply don't like?
That was the concern from the teachers that I talked to. You know, like, I did reach out to other people within the union in Washington State, and their perspective on it was basically like, students are students, high school students, like, they don't really understand what the consequences of these kind of accusations are, especially when you include things like social media, which can just inflame situations so much more. So they were basically saying, like, this is a good reason to put something like a cell phone ban in Washington State, which there isn't one currently here, because it'll just prevent these kind of incidents potentially from happening.
Fascinating, fascinating. Eric Newman, he's the Southwest Washington Bureau Chief for OPB. Eric, really appreciate you coming on and talking about this story.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll bring you the story of Oregon's shocking lack of attorneys to handle cases and the damaging consequences people are seeing all over the state. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.